Good morning, Mr. May. It's 10:12 a.m. on May 14th, 2010. This is Brad Bondi of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. We're here with for the interview of William Bill May from Moody's Corporation, and with the we're here in New York City. Would the persons in the room please announce themselves and spell their last name?
Sharon Nellis, N-E-L-L-E-S, from Sullivan and Cromwell, and Matt Sullivan, also from Sullivan and Cromwell.
Steve Ross from Aiken Gump, and I'm here with Megan Greer from Aiken Gump, R-O-S-S.
Thank you.
William May, M-A-Y, from Moody's.
Great. Good morning, Mr. May. Thank you for your time and being here today. As I mentioned at the start, I'm with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. We are a bipartisan commission set up by Congress to investigate the causes of the financial crisis. We are also investigating the ratings agencies and the role that ratings may have played in the crisis. I'm obligated to tell you at the start that because I'm a government employee conducting a government investigation, 18 U.S.C. 1001 applies, and your lawyers can explain to you what that means. And in layman's terms, it means that it makes it a crime to provide knowingly or willfully provide false or misleading information to a government agent. I don't say that because I have reason to believe that you're not going to be truthful today, but I'm just obligated to tell you that. Why don't we start off by just telling me your background with Moody's Corporation?
I joined Moody's in 1993 from a firm called Brown & Wood, which used to do a lot of structured finance, but they've since been absorbed into Sidley Austin. And I joined the derivatives group. I worked there from 1993 until 2008. And at that time, I was transferred to work over on what we call the commercial group.
And within the derivatives group, what titles did you hold from 93 to 2008?
In 1993, I started as a VP senior analyst.
Was that a legal analyst or a quantitative analyst?
No, it's legal. I'm not a quant. I'm a lawyer by training. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in 93, you joined as a VP, a legal analyst?
Right. Yeah. Senior analyst was the title.
Thank you. And how long were you a senior analyst?
I believe about 2 years.
And that would bring us to around 1995 or so?
Right. And I was promoted to senior credit officer, I believe was the title.
And in a nutshell, what is a senior credit officer?
It's largely the same thing as a senior analyst. It's just a recognition that you've been there and gained experience and knowledge, and they're acknowledging that with a promotion.
Great. And how long did you hold the position of senior credit officer?
For 2 years, until 1997.
And then what happened?
I became a senior vice president.
And how long were you a senior vice president?
Until 2002, when I was made a managing director.
And what was your responsibilities as a managing director?
I supervised the analysts in the group who were doing the actual ratings.
And I understand you may have had some focus on particular types of products, such as CLOs. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And did you have any involvement in rating of CDOs?
The CDOs, CLO is a type of CDO, mm-hmm. It's a collateralized debt obligation, but my specific job was overseeing CLOs, which are composed of bank loans.
Mm-hmm. And I apologize, I should have been clearer when I was using a much abbreviated shorthand. When I'm talking about CDOs, I had in mind CDOs where the underlying collateral was RMBS.
Right.
Did you have any involvement at all in rating of CDOs where the underlying collateral was RMBS?
No, I never. That did not fall under my responsibilities.
And how long were you a managing director?
I still am. I'm a team managing director, so from 2002 until now.
Okay. I understand there are different levels of managing director.
That's correct.
Did you start at a different level managing director than you are now?
No, I'm the same that I was in 2002.
So from 2002 to 2008, you were a managing director. And other than CLOs, what areas underneath?
I'm sorry, it was 2009 when I was in the derivatives group.
Oh no, it's okay. Thank you for the correction. So from 2002 to 2009 as managing director,
right.
We mentioned CLOs, but
that's
any
right.
other products that your analysts were generally responsible for rating?
Structured notes.
Mm-hmm. What else?
The derivative product companies.
And by derivative product companies, could
they
you explain what you mean there?
Sure. Mm-hmm. They were companies that were subsidiaries of large banks or investment banks that were set up typically in the early to mid-90s to trade interest rate swaps and FX swaps. Those are their major products.
Okay. And any other products that your team was generally responsible for rating?
I think that covers the major areas.
Okay. And you mentioned that you were a lawyer and are a lawyer, I should say. Once a lawyer, always a lawyer, right? And you practiced law. How long were you with Brown & Wood?
5 years.
And is that where you started your practice?
Yes.
Do you know Tom Smith at Brown & Wood?
I know Tom Smith. I mean, obviously. He was a managing partner when I was at Brown & Wood many, many years ago.
Yeah.
In the New York office. Do you know?
Yeah, he joined as a senior advisor to the SEC, where I was prior to joining the commission, and had an opportunity to work with Mr. Smith. Very nice man.
Yes, he was a 40 Act expert,
mm-hmm.
at least at Brown & Wood.
So you were at Moody's when Moody's was part of Dun & Bradstreet, correct?
Yes.
And then about what year did Moody's become a separate public company?
2000.
And can you tell me about what changed at Moody's, generally speaking, the atmosphere, the culture between when it was part of Dun & Bradstreet until it broke off as its own public company?
From my experience, the atmosphere didn't change much at all. I don't think for the analyst and for the team managing directors doing everyday ratings work, at least to me, the atmosphere did not feel different. What changed was we grew in size. When I joined the derivatives group, there were about 6 people in the group, and we, you know, grew obviously to be much, much larger than that over the course of the 16 years I was in the group.
And during your course at Moody's, I understand that the sources of revenue for Moody's changed significantly. Is that your understanding as well?
Yes. With the growth of the structured finance market, more revenue came from the structured finance side, whereas in the past, more of it came from the structured finance side. I don't know what the exact mm-hmm. breakup or split was.
And can you share any examples of any challenges that you may have observed with the growth of the structured finance side of the business?
We became, you know, when you grow from being very small, you have a much more intimate atmosphere. If you're only working with 5 other people, you obviously know them more intimately, to a much larger group, and it becomes less personal, more business-like. So then you worry, you know, you have more people to look after. The dynamic changes.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the challenges as this dynamic changed?
I think many of the challenges were the same as almost any manager would face: attracting talent, keeping talent, making sure that you stay on top of the market, maybe making sure that you remain perceived as leaders in the rating market, in the rating arena.
Mm-hmm. And how do you maintain, be a leader in the ratings area? How does the structured finance business grow? How did it grow?
Well, let me answer your first question. You remain leaders in the ratings business by publishing research, speaking at conferences, speaking to investors, explaining your opinions and how you arrive at them and how you develop the ratings, and you make your case for being thought leaders, opinion leaders in the credit world. So you want investors to value your rating, so then people will come and seek your rating, because for the bankers, for the issuers, it makes it easier to sell their debt if Moody's is standing behind it and saying, this is what we think of this debt.
Mm-hmm. And I should have been more precise in my questions. I'm sorry, I'm asking some big philosophical type questions. I'm feeling philosophical today.
That was the plane ride.
That was the rough plane ride, rough travel up.
You saw his life flash before his eyes.
Exactly. Mr. May, as the business grew,
yes,
and by that I mean structured finance business across the board, your counterparts in other areas like the CDOs with RMBS, as the RMBS business grew, do you feel that resources grew in lockstep with the growth of the business?
I'm not sure about lockstep. Certainly resources grew to handle a much greater influx of business into the company.
Were there resource challenges as you grew?
Sure. The structured finance market grew relatively rapidly, and we had to try to grow rapidly as well to handle the much greater influx of deals that came in the door.
Were there times where you or your colleagues didn't feel that you had enough resources to rate deals?
I think there were times when we felt we were making the people who were there work very, very hard. I think we still got our job done, but certainly it put a much greater stress on the staff.
Mm-hmm. And did you personally express any concern about the stress that was put on the staff?
Well, it was my day-to-day job to be concerned with their well-being and their functioning in their job. So certainly, we certainly requested on a regular basis adds to staff.
I'm sorry,
adds to staff?
Ads?
Ads, ADDS.
I'm sorry, what?
More staff?
Oh, I'm sorry. Adding more staff.
Yes.
Adding more staff personnel. I see.
Right.
Hiring more people.
Right.
I see. And you started off, you mentioned earlier, as a legal analyst. What's a legal analyst do?
Read documentation, read opinions, discuss deals, discuss structures with lawyers, that sort of thing.
Is a legal analyst important to the ratings process?
Yes, it's certainly among the legal issues are certainly among the things we look at when rating a deal. There are many fewer of them than there are the quantitative analysts, but it is certainly an important part of the process.
And were there ever any complaints by your supervisors about the legal analyst slowing down the deals?
I can't recall specific complaints. Not from my supervisors. Occasionally bankers would complain, but...
And tell me about bankers complaining about the legal analyst.
They would simply complain that the legal analysts were making too many comments that they felt weren't relevant when they were trying to get a deal done.
And what would happen to the legal analyst at Moody's, who were the focus of these complaints from the bankers?
I'm sorry, I don't understand. What do you mean, what would happen to them?
Were there ever any legal analysts, to your knowledge, who were taken off of rating deals by certain banks?
You mean while they were rating the deal, taken off of the deal?
No. I meant, do you know of any banks that complained about any legal analyst, and as a result, the legal analysts were taken off of rating future deals by that particular bank?
I think that probably did happen, but only in consultation with the analyst himself.
So was the analyst's choice to be taken off the deals by that bank?
It was never a bank calls and complains and then we do what the bank wants. If a bank calls because they're not getting along well with an analyst, you go to that analyst and say, what is the interaction like? Is there a problem? You know, do you not get along with this particular one? Does he not get along with you? It was never done in response to a specific bank complaint. Often bankers can be very aggressive, and you might also want to rotate analysts just because some bankers are more aggressive than others.
And by aggressive, what do you mean?
Misbehaving, yelling, screaming into the phone, making the working atmosphere difficult.
And by misbehaving, do you mean in their personal conduct, or do you mean in the way that they were presenting the deal?
Those were when they were speaking to Moody's, they were presenting a deal. Mm-hmm. So it's one and the same.
What I was getting at is by misbehaving, are you suggesting that any of the bankers may have tried to game the rating process or manipulate the rating process in some way or fashion?
The bankers were eager to get as high a rating as they possibly could for whatever deal structure they were presenting, and they would push hard to get certain features in deals. There was always a tension, and the relationship between Moody's and the bankers were often contentious.
Mm-hmm. And was this contentious relationship, was this between analysts and the bankers, or the managing directors and the bankers, or did it depend?
It depended.
Mm-hmm. And in what instances would the relationship be contentious between the analysts and the bankers? In what sense? What were some of the contentious situations that you observed or heard about between analysts and bankers?
Analysts would sometimes come and ask to be taken off deals particular bankers were doing because they were so aggressive and tended to scream so much and be so demanding. It would make the analysts' lives unnecessarily unpleasant. So they would ask to be not do the next deal with that banker or possibly even to be taken off the current deal.
And were analysts ever taken off future deals by bankers, not because they asked to be taken off the deals, but because the managing director decided to take the banker off, take the analyst off the deal?
There may have been a decision made that certain analysts wouldn't work with certain bankers because the relationship was so contentious that it was not conducive to doing good business, but never without consulting the analyst.
And by what do you mean by consulting the analyst?
You would talk to him and say, this banker is complaining. What's going on? Is he making your life miserable? Is there just a clash of personalities? Do you want to do this anymore? Would you prefer somebody else handle this banker? There would be a discussion.
But by consulting the analyst, are you suggesting that it wouldn't be without the consent of the analyst?
I'm sorry, but
you said never without consulting the analyst. And what I'm asking is, by that, are you suggesting that the analyst would consent to being taken off, that in no instances were analysts taken off deals where they didn't consent to be taken off deals?
Well, I don't ever remember an analyst being removed from a deal he was working on at the time.
And what about future deals, though?
That may have happened where it appeared that the relationship had just deteriorated to a point where it was interfering with business, interfering with a good flow and creating a bad working atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. And did you yourself ever receive any calls, complaints from bankers about the analysts that work for you?
Yes.
Can you tell me about all the complaints you received? Was this so frequent you can't recount them all?
It was not unusual for bankers to whinge about analysts, but that is just the nature of the beast.
And did you yourself, in response to a complaint from a banker, ever take an analyst off of future deals by either that particular banker or that particular institution?
It wasn't a matter of taking them off, but typically, I'm trying to think. We would avoid putting, there were a couple of analysts who were particularly you would avoid putting them on certain deals with the bankers after talking to them.
Who?
So.
What were their names?
Probably the analyst who created the most, or who seemed to have the most. There were some analysts who had more contentious relationships with bankers than others.
What analysts?
So.
Who?
Was one.
Who else?
There was a guy named who occasionally was the subject of complaints.
Who else? Who else?
Off the top of my head, that's all I can remember.
Did you ever hear being criticized either by yourself or anyone else for over-lawyering a deal?
Yes.
What does that mean, over-lawyering?
Bringing up issues that were not issues and spending a great deal of time negotiating or arguing about things that were not relevant.
And what would that mean if there was additional time spent on issues? What would that translate to in terms of the deal, Moody's, revenue? What does that translate to?
I don't know that directly. I'm sorry, what?
What's the consequences of spending too much time on a particular legal issue? What's the consequences?
It's a waste of your time. Mm-hmm. It's a waste of your client's time. It's unproductive. It is... an inefficient use of your time, your client's time, everyone else's.
Slows down the deal for the bank.
Obviously, it slows down the deal for the bank, but more to the point, it's not germane.
And how was the... If a deal required a particular extra amount of legal review, because of the reps and warranties and the contractual documents. Would that mean that there would be more fees earned on the legal side? How did that work in terms of the structure? Did it matter financially how much time was spent by the legal analyst on a particular issue?
The fees were... I'm sorry, ask me the question again.
Sure. I also am a lawyer, and the more time I spend on something, or at least when I was in private practice, rather, the more it would incur fees on the client.
Mm-hmm.
You paid by the hour, that sort of thing. How were the legal analysts, how was Moody's compensated for the work of the legal analyst? In other words, if they spent more time on a particular issue, would it mean there'd be more fees incurred?
No. I mean, deals typically had a standardized fee, but that was never the point.
Mm-hmm.
The point was we have an analyst here who is wasting a good deal of time talking about irrelevant things. Mm-hmm. Revenue has fees have nothing to do with it.
What bankers complained about?
Pardon me?
What bankers complained about?
There were several over the years. I don't remember specifically which ones at this point.
Chris Ricciardi, was he one?
I don't ever remember talking to Chris about.
Do you ever remember hearing from others at Moody's that Chris Ricciardi had complained about?
No.
Do you ever recall hearing from anyone that Chris Ricciardi had complained about?
No. I don't recall anything like that. Chris Ricciardi complained about a lot of things.
Sure.
That was his nature.
What banks or deals was ever taken off of, either during the middle of the deal or for future deals with a particular bank?
I can't ever remember being taken off of a deal in the middle of the deal.
Okay. What about after a deal and about future deals with a particular bank or bankers?
I'm trying to think. It goes to your question earlier. I don't. I know a number of bankers complained about. I just do not remember at this point specifically which ones they were.
Okay. You said he was a quantitative analyst?
Yes.
Okay. What bankers complained about?
I don't remember specifically.
Okay. What deals, either at the time or future deals, was Mr. taken off of?
Bankers had complained about him, but at one point had switched to developing a new product, working directly for a guy named Jerry Gluck, who was an MD. So at that point he was doing development work. I don't remember specific banker complaints about him.
What generally were the complaints about?
Has a very assertive personality, which some people find degrading.
Degrading, you said?
Sorry. No, grating. G-R-A-T-I-N-G.
Grating, sorry.
I need to work on my diction, I guess.
No, I think my ears are stopped up from the flight. Apologies. And what do you mean by that? Can you give me some examples of what did that was deemed to be great?
It was not a specific thing. It was his general nature and personality. His fellow analysts felt the same way about him.
And do you remember any institutions, banks, that may not have been assigned to rate deals from that bank?
No.
And you said at some point he went to go work with Jerry Gluck. When was that, roughly?
This was in the 1990s. He eventually left to go to Bear Stearns.
Do you know when he left to go to Bear Stearns?
I don't. I don't remember. Tenure at the company. Yes.
What banks or bankers complained about?
I don't remember specific ones. There were a number of them.
And what were the complaints generally about?
Much the same as lots and lots of issues raised that were not issues and that wasted time and were just not germane to rating the deal at hand.
And I'm going to separate this question. I've been combining them together, and I'll separate this one. Was taken off of a deal during the middle of the deal?
Not to my knowledge.
Was ever taken off of future deals by a particular bank or banker?
That is possible.
Why do you say that's possible?
Once again, if there was an extremely contentious, unproductive relationship between an analyst and a banker, we would speak to the analyst and say, do you want to keep doing this? Why is this so contentious? Is it the banker? Is there just a clash of personalities? Would you rather not do this in the future? Does it make sense to take you off of this banker's deals in the future?
Did Brian Clarkson ever express any concern to you about?
Not that I recall.
Brian Clarkson ever express an opinion about you?
The only time I remember Brian speaking about was when I worked on the three of us together worked on what I'll call a special project for the GC's office. And Brian was impressed with work on that deal as well.
And in fact, Mr. Clarkson even gave some recognition on a phone call to that work. Is that correct?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Did Mr. Clarkson ever mention favorably the work of Mr. in connection with that event that you described?
Yes, he was very happy with how that particular project turned out that the three of us had worked on, and was very happy with the work we did on it.
He wasn't very happy with the in-house legal crew that couldn't do that work, is that correct?
Well, it wasn't that they couldn't do that work, it was that the in-house legal crew wanted to change our applications in a way that simply would have prevented Moody's from doing business. And there was a great deal of senior management discussion around the project.
In general, though, was that event somewhat of an anomaly in the sense that was Mr. Clarkson usually critical of the legal analyst?
You know, Brian was several steps above me. I didn't talk to him all that often. Was he generally critical of the legal analyst? Not to me.
To others?
It's possible. But you need to talk to Brian or the others.
Well, did others express to you that Mr. Clarkson had complained about the legal analyst?
I don't recall that. It's possible I don't recall.
I'll represent to you that we've heard that you've been described as someone who protected the legal analyst from Brian Clarkson. Why do you think someone would describe you as that?
I protected all the analysts. I viewed it as my job as a manager to try to get them the most resources I could, to make their jobs as easy as I could, to represent how hard they were working and how good they were to senior analysts, to senior management. If that's viewed as protecting them, then I protected everybody, because I felt that was my job to do so.
Specifically of the legal analyst, how did you protect the legal analyst?
The same way I would protect, if that's the word you want to use, all the other analysts who worked for me, by representing senior management, how talented they were, how hard they worked, what a good job they did, how much effort they put into their ratings, how much integrity they had. I was very proud of the analysts who worked in the derivatives group, and I fully backed them as their manager. So if that's what you mean by protect, then yes, I did it for them as well as all the other analysts.
Did you feel that that was necessary for some reason? Did senior management express a view that you felt was incorrect about the legal analysts that worked for you?
I don't know that they expressed them. I don't remember specific criticisms. I was a champion and cheerleader for the analysts who worked in the group. I felt we had very high hiring standards, and we expected a lot of the analysts, and they delivered. They had enormous integrity, enormous honesty, and did an enormous amount of hard work, and I wanted to make sure that that was understood and they were appreciated.
If in the time period of 2005 through 2007, early 2007, before the market, before summer of 2007, from 2005 to 2007.
Right.
If you had a friend who said, I'm thinking about becoming a legal analyst at Moody's, if you had to say, what are the good parts about being a legal analyst at Moody's? Tell me what you would say to your friend about what are the good, you know, good characteristics about being a legal analyst.
You get a great collegial open door working atmosphere. We're at the heart of the capital markets, so we feel what we do is important and that we do it right. It is a place you can come and enjoy your work and feel what you're doing is productive and important. And you can actually, well, from the period of 2005 to 2007 would have been difficult, but you could have a life.
Mm-hmm. Why would it have been difficult? It was a busy period?
It was very busy.
Mm-hmm. And generally, if someone asked you, was applying for a position as a legal analyst working either underneath you or one of the other MDs, what could you tell them about how long they would have to work? What was their work, you know, what was their workload?
I would have said the hours were very long. It's still better than working at a law firm. As virtually anything is better than working at a New York corporate law firm. But the hours were lengthy. And, sorry.
So, hey, Ms. Nellis might stipulate to that assertion.
But, you know, the majority of the work Moody's done is more of a quantitative nature, so you would be part and parcel of doing the rating and an adjunct, but, you know, there were many more quants than legal people. Still, you know, I still thought we offered a great atmosphere, especially vis-a-vis working at a firm, but these are decisions everyone must make about what sorts of trade-offs he wants to make. Obviously, if you stay and make partner at a firm, you will make more money, for instance, than working at a rating agency. So these are all things that every individual must consider for himself. But those are the good things I would say about coming to work there.
Sure. And I think you pointed out one of the drawbacks of being a legal analyst is you don't get paid perhaps as much as you would in private practice. But what were some of the other drawbacks of being a legal analyst?
I think that is you would be considered off track if you wanted to go back in a law firm, mm-hmm. because you had stepped out of that, off literally off that track. you know, you it's just a very, very different life. I have to say I've enjoyed my many years at Moody's as an analyst, and I think a number of other people have as well. So, but the major drawback would be, unlike at a law firm where you are the center of the action, you are a supporting player. You must accept that. An important one, but a supporting player nonetheless. And you are taking a step off of, if your dream was to be a big partner at a big New York law firm, coming to Moody's was not the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Where would you hire from? From the big law firms?
Yes, typically we hire from the large law firms that had large structured finance practices. I think most of our, we hired from Sullivan and Cromwell, we hired from Skadden Arps, Brown and Wood, Frank, there were the typical large New York law firm refugees.
Refugees, you said?
Well, I mean, being...
Did I hear you right that you said refugees?
Maybe I shouldn't have used that word, but that's it. I mean, you could come and you could see your children at night. I mean, it's a very conscious decision you need to make about what you want in life and what is important to you.
Mm-hmm. And how were legal analysts compensated? How did the compensation work?
They moved in the same... Legal analysts were viewed as analysts, first and foremost. So, for instance, my first job there was a senior analyst. The quants get the same title. And then their promotions and the pay grades are the same. So they are lumped in with their analysts. They have legal expertise. That is what they bring to the business. But they are analysts just as the quant analysts are analysts.
Mm-hmm. And if I were a friend of yours wanting a job in this time frame of 2005, 2006, and I said, Bill, but if I'm going to work so hard, am I going to be recognized for that? Is there any bonus? Is there any... additional compensation, or am I stuck with a locked salary?
No, we have always had bonuses, and since we've been spun off, there has been an options portion of compensation as well.
And tell me about the various compensation parts that go along with being a legal analyst.
The compensation is the same for legal analysts as for any analyst. There's no distinction.
And what are these components of the compensation?
There is a base salary, there is a bonus, and there is some options are given at the end of the year.
And
so it has three components, essentially. And then pension fund, you know, whatever other 401k match, those sorts of things.
And roughly is the bonus 50% of the salary generally in this 2005-2006 time frame? Was it 100%? Was it you would earn more in bonus than you would in salary? Roughly, what were the figures?
Typically, bonuses were smaller than the base salary. How much smaller varied from year to year and typically depended on how well the company as a whole did.
And what was generally the base salary?
For what?
For a legal analyst.
Who would start mm-hmm. from 2005 to 2007.
Mm-hmm. Ballpark, I know it's...
Yeah, I mean...
You may not remember exactly, but I'm...
Someone who came in with a little more experience than another might be paid a little more. Let's call it a base salary of... In the 180, 200 range? I don't remember exactly, but that is a rough estimate.
And how was the bonus calculated?
Senior management set a target goal for increase of revenues at the beginning of the year. To the extent the company matched that, the bonuses were higher. To the extent they didn't, bonuses were lower. To the extent that target was